listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skulls in a pool of cerebral spinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. Crystal spheres and reticles. Learning to see with the eye of a striker. We humans are all prone to paranoid fantasies. When we walk down the street, it's perfectly normal to look at that individual approaching you and wonder if they harbor ill intentions towards you, and begin to plan responses. It's part of our genetic heritage as prey animals. In the brain of a trained martial arts striker, these paranoid fantasies can take on much more granular detail. As a young martial artist, the first striking technique with which I developed a high sense of confidence was my sidekick. And my favorite target for the sidekick was the knee joint of my opponent's lead leg. Now, before you go off into a rant about how dangerous this was, know that I have already discussed developing a low-kicking game with an acceptable safety margin at length in this podcast, in episode number 116, entitled The Red-Headed Stepchild of Striking. Anyway, I became so obsessed with the low sidekick that I found myself practicing it all day long against every possible target. If the target was something which it was in my best interest not to damage, like my mother's flowers or one of her annoying little dogs, I practiced my control with the kick. If the target was immovable, like a concrete wall or a standing steel pipe, I practiced kicking somewhat hard while trying not to do damage to my kicking leg or foot, and also trying to keep my balance. If the target was more appropriate for fully practicing my kick, like a heavy bag or a kicking shield, then I was able to cut loose and do lots of valuable reps. I chose the sidekick to the knee because I was obsessed with Bruce Lee, and I was following his principle of using the longest weapon to attack the closest target. Now, I was not above, or should I say below, throwing my sidekick at other higher targets. I kicked many a training partner in the ribs, and not a few in the face. But my default setting and my specialty was the sidekick to the knee. Once I developed a certain level of ability with this kick, I realized a new level of appreciation for Bruce Lee's principle. Proper use of it made it really difficult for sparring partners to get close enough to me to do anything. While this may have been annoying as hell for my sparring partners, it did increase my confidence at being able to use my kicking skills to protect myself to a much higher degree. Now, of course, there exists a number of different variations of the sidekick. As a matter of fact, I list many of them in episode number 150 entitled The Photoshop Effect. And each variation has its own range, its own optimal distance that it can reach. As your skill and awareness grows, you become hyper-aware of the effective range of your favorite techniques. And each of these ranges could be visualized as a sphere, with you at the center. Of course, you can see through the sphere, so in a fanciful way, I imagine it as being made of transparent crystal. This array of nested spheres generated by all your different techniques move along with you as you move through your environment. When a situation comes up requiring one or another variation of one or another striking technique, it'd be wise to select one that's appropriate for the distance to the target. That is to say, for which crystal sphere is closest to touching the target. The sphere that demarks the range for my defensive sidekick will be smaller and closer to me compared to the one for the burst sidekick. As your striking game grows, you begin to develop similar range-finding heuristics for each of the new techniques you learn. This puts you in a state of having a great many figurative crystal spheres around you, from the very nearest ranges, like the one for headbutting, to the one for your farthest-reaching kick. Of course, you don't see them all at once in your mind's eye, but you are now more aware of just which weapon from your arsenal is optimal, for instance, for the distance between you and that fire hydrant, or that poodle, or that opponent. That's a visualization of tactical ranges. Now let's move on to tactical angles. Imagine that you're standing in a natural stance. Your feet shoulder-width apart and pointed straight ahead, with no nearby opponent to use as a reference point. Instead, your frame of reference will be based on the central plane of your body, or in other words, the direction your nose points if you're standing with your head at neutral angle, looking neither to the right nor to the left. Let's call the direction in which you're looking north. That means that south is directly behind you, east to your right, and west to your left. For our first mental exercise from this position, I'm going to stipulate that you may not rotate your feet or your trunk in order to strike. That eliminates a lot. With that rule in place, and from this natural stance, what effective strikes do you have, and to which angles? Strangely, at least to me, straight to your north is not a very good striking direction. Short of simple strikes to very sensitive targets, like finger jabs to the eye or feeble kicks to the groin, feeble because you can't pivot, your non-rotational striking game has little to threaten targets that lie precisely straight ahead. Also, strangely, at least to me, one of your best directions for striking without rotation lies directly to your rear. What exercise physiologists call your posterior chain, that is to say your glutes, hamstrings, calves, and spinal erectors, are beautifully structured and integrated to allow you to stomp your heel straight to the rear with tremendous force. All you need to do to facilitate this is to cant your upper body forward a bit and balance on one leg. Of course, the problem there is that your eyes are pointing in the wrong direction. You can't see what you're stomping at without a bit of contortion of your upper body. You also have pretty effective frontal thrusting kicks to the northeast and northwest with your right leg and left leg, respectively. You can thrust a punch on a straight trajectory with either arm, but the optimal angle is closer to west by northwest for your right hand and east by northeast for your left hand. And of course, if you leave out rotation, curved strikes like hook punches and round kicks are nearly worthless. Now, if you play around with all of this, you'll soon realize just how important being able to pivot on your feet and rotate your trunk is to striking. Such rotation generates tremendous power and also allows you to make minute adjustments for when the angle between you and the target are less than perfect. So what's the point of this mental exercise? I assert that, despite the use of rotational adjustment, each striking technique still has a nearly perfect or optimal angle in relation to your body's central plane. After all, even with all the pivoting of which you are capable, without first doing some footwork, you would probably never try to hit somebody standing to your southwest with a straight right hand. A good example of this idea is from Muay Thai. The signature kick of this highly effective martial art is the round kick. Referring back to our squared-up, neutral reference stance, now being allowed to pivot, and assuming that you're kicking with your right leg, your optimal angle for power with the Muay Thai kick will be within an arc that centers to the northwest. And of course, for your left leg, it will be to the northeast. That's why Muay Thai uses a stance that's different from the boxing stance, one that's roughly 30 degrees or so more squared up to the opponent than is the boxing stance. And that's because the straight right hand, the most basic finishing punch of boxing, finds its best power about 30 degrees further west around the compass than does the right round kick. That's why the boxing stance is a bit more bladed, or sideways, than is the Muay Thai stance, which is closer to being square to the opponent. Now, all of this doesn't mean that if you strike 1 degree to the right or to the left of this optimal angle, that your strike will have little or no effect. What it does mean is that your strike will have its best effect precisely on that angle, and that the effectiveness will tail off rapidly as you deviate to either side. So now we can see an intersection between the imaginary crystal spheres I described earlier, that illustrate the range of each technique, and the geometric planes that illustrate the optimal angle of delivery for each technique. That intersection would look to you and me like a vertical line segment in space, floating between you and the potential target. This further means that, Like our selection of crystal spheres, we also have an entire array of vertical line segments surrounding us, depicting the optimal striking angle for each of our weapons. And, just as the crystal spheres move through our environment with us as we move, when we rotate in space, turning towards the east or the west, these vertical line segments move along with our rotation, bringing different targets into alignment and out of alignment with each of our various weapons. But we can narrow down our targeting system even more. The altitude of your strike is of vital importance. I touched on this earlier when I said that the low sidekick takes precedence for me over other altitudes for that weapon. Taking into consideration your opponent's various anatomical features that serve as targets, like the knee joint, the groin, the liver, the solar plexus, the throat, the jaw, and of course many more, it becomes obvious that they live at different altitudes along your opponent's body. Some targets are high, some targets are in the middle, and some targets are low. But even this classic system of dividing into three altitudes is imprecise. After all, the point of accuracy is hitting exactly what you want to hit. So with the added third dimension of altitude horizontally intersecting with the vertical dimension of the proper angle of delivery, we get an imaginary visual representation that looks like what is sometimes called a crosshairs, or reticle. So just as you move through your environment with the imaginary set of crystal spheres that show the range of each of your techniques, the targeting system that your training develops will consistently depict imaginary crosshairs on the surface of these spheres as you spot potential targets. So does the fact that I walk around looking at the world this way mean that there's something wrong with me? Well, I think it's obvious to regular listeners of this podcast that there is indeed something wrong with me. I think that in my case, at least the existence in my martial brain of these fantasy crystal spheres and reticles simply means that I spent a lot of years training the shit out of my striking skills. If you walk around looking at your environment as a collection of potential targets to strike, you are either a psychopath, or you're experiencing perfectly normal paranoid fantasies, typical for a trained athlete that is also an animal whose genetic forebears were similarly targeted by predators. Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think. And check out old episodes of the Martial Brain Podcast at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for the Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about the Martial Brain or about the Rising Phoenix Academy at my website, rpmartialarts.com.